Welcome, everyone, to the United Nations of Horror. It has been a while. I'm Jason, and I'm joined by...
me, Mark!
Mark, how's it been, man?
Yeah, it's going good. Unfortunately, life has kind of got in the way of us being able to record and in any sort of regular process. And anyone who follows my podcast is good, but will notice I haven't recorded for put out an episode for quite some time, though I've just started again, because life, right? Stuff's
life,
happened.
Man.
But now we're back on the horror train. We're back on the horror train.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about a couple of movies we both really enjoyed, I believe.
Yeah, these were a lot of fun. I think we both just kind of wanted something fun, but in the horror realm, you know, with everything that's been going on. And I hope that we can get back to a normal recording schedule at some point. But, you know, we'll just have to see. But we're not pod fading, as I seem to say every episode now. You know, I just want to make sure people, like, we're, the podcast is not going
anywhere. We're fading, then 3 months later, we come back again.
Yeah, right.
We're like reanimated corpses or something. That's what we're in.
I know, like, we pop up in people's feed and they're probably like, oh man, those guys are still alive.
Those guys. Yeah, those guys. Because, like, Peter, it seems like everyone's pumping out Halloween-y horror stuff lately, aren't they? That's passed us by, man.
I feel terrible about that. I really do. But it's life. And, you know, we're still around and we will get back to, like I say, regular recording schedule just in due time.
Yeah, I have to say there's been some great content out in October for Halloween stuff. That's really cool. My favorite by far is Peerless, as far as I'm concerned, is Talk Without a River. Mel Gore on Talk Without a River always does a 31 Days of Horror, where he does 31 horror films he's never seen.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's amazing. October the 1st, it's like a really old one, often a silent one. And then as he moves through it, it's later and later, so until near the end of, you know, the 31st, he's doing something that's fairly recent. Like, for example, the last one he did on the 31st of October was Black Phone, for example, which is a fairly recent film.
That's on my watch list, yeah.
Yeah. It sounds, he's made me want to watch it, actually, from what he said. Really, that's kept me going through October. I have to say that one is a terrific series. And he's done it for 13 years in a row now. I can't remember a time he wasn't doing it. And I've listened to Talk Without Room for a good 10 years, at least. And I always look for, you know, Halloween starting when El Goro starts talking about 31 Days of Horror. You know?
Absolutely.
So that was really cool. Anyway, I've kind of digressed.
It's always good to talk about Halloween. I mean, it's my favorite time of the year. You know, the weather's getting cooler. You've got horror movies on television and on streaming services. So as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't get any better. You know, plus candy. Who doesn't love that, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
But I have to say, lots of good content for sure. And we've definitely got some to talk about as well. I don't think this is the only thing we've been watching, but maybe next episode we'll just do a kind of what we've been watching rundown.
That would be a good idea, because I've watched quite a bit of horror, actually.
Yeah, so, I have too.
That would be a good idea.
Well, let's get into it, Mark. We've been watching Tremors, which came about in 1990. It's kind of a horror-y comma, in the words of Becky.
Yes, already come. Yes, one I've seen several times. You've seen it before, right?
This was my first watch.
Like, you're joking. Such Sights episode as well. Then
it is. Yes. Already
come. Oh man, we're covering a few bases here.
So I had heard of Tremors through the TV series that was on Sci-Fi Network, but I actually did not realize it was connected to a film series until I started doing a little bit of research for this.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
That's amazing.
So
yeah,
when did
you
first come to this, Mark?
Oh, years ago. I can't remember when. I saw it on video. I know I didn't see it at the movies, but I saw it on video. Probably not when it came out, because this was the time when I had started a PhD, and I really didn't get out much or watch much TV for a good 4 or 5 years. And then after that, I started a family. So I was out of the loop for a good 10 years, really. I'd say 1990 to 2000, I really wasn't seeing that much. The odd big thing, you know, like Jurassic Park or Pulp Fiction or The Matrix, those kind of things, but really not consuming much media, frankly. Sleep was more important.
Oh, yeah. When you're working towards that, I mean, plus family stuff, that's a lot going on all at once. So, but hey, yeah, you had X-Files, right? So
yeah, I had the X-Files and prior to that, Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
But that was about my level. But that was fine. I quite like that. So, and in fact, I think time shows that both the X-Files and Twin Peaks are probably superior to pretty much all the horror that came out in the 90s. There's exceptions, of course. Yeah. There's exceptions, of course. But, you know, it wasn't that horror of the 90s was nothing like horror of the 80s in terms of volume or quality. And what I mean is there was a certain thing, how craziness in 80s horror that was kind of toned down quite a lot in the 90s. Not necessarily a bad thing, it's just it was a different kettle of fish. But this was the 1990, and this is kind of almost pre-80s in its, because it's a monster movie, it's harking back to the 50s, right? It's that kind of it's something like that.
Yeah, it definitely has that kind of 1960s or 50s drive-in monster movie feel to it.
Yeah.
And it's a really big cast too for the time. I mean, I was just looking over and I was like, man, a lot of these guys like Kevin Bacon, you know, you don't hear about him much anymore, but he was huge at the time. And you know, Fred Ward, he was pretty big too. We'll talk about Tremors 1 and 2 here, so we'll be talking a little bit more about him later. But then you have some interesting side cast members like Reba McEntire, the country singer. I was just like, man, really a great cast. People you don't really see that much anymore. You know, also Victor Wong, I was like, oh man, I know I've seen him in some stuff, but
Big Trouble in Little China, right?
There you go.
jumps out at me most, but he's been in all sorts, that guy as well. But I really like him. I also, I mean, you've kind of touched on the main characters, but I also like Bert, played by Michael Gross. Bert is kind of fun. And Bert is quite an important character because he's the one that is in every film, I believe. And I think TV series as well. So he is like our linchpin through the entire series.
Oh, that's terrific.
So that's worth knowing. And I think there are 7 movies as well as the TV show. So there's a fair few Tremors movies. And you know what? I've never heard a bad thing said about any of them. When people talk about Tremors movies, they are liked. They are liked as a franchise. So that's kind of bodes well, doesn't it? If we continue watching them.
Absolutely. And I do want to actually see all of them. Because, you know, without giving a full review, I'll just say that I enjoyed the first one quite a lot and the second one. This is just a lot of kind of horror driving fun. So, I mean, it's released by Universal Pictures, so you've got that kind of legacy going there. I like how you just start out with these two working class guys in the middle of nowhere. It's just like California, you know, desert, basically, maybe Las Vegas desert. And I'm trying to remember the name of the town.
Perfection.
Yes. And they want to leave for Vegas. Right?
It's a proper desert town. I've only been to America once. I went to Vegas, but I did go through quite a long road trip and actually saw a few towns like this. And they were like this. So this kind of encapsulates it. I have to say, after I watched it, it occurred to me, you know what, this is kind of one of the premier movies in a franchise in a subgenre that I don't think has been named. I've never heard this named, but essentially it's kind of buddy horror, right? Buddy cop films. This is a buddy horror film, and I was trying to think of other examples of that. A really obvious one is
Tucker and Dale.
That's it. Tucker and Dale. And there's a few others. There's Shaun of the Dead. And it occurred to me in the 90s, there was two major TV shows with that vibe, and that was The X-Files and Supernatural.
Yep.
Right. I know they were brothers rather than buddies, but it was essentially two people who were friends or, you know, get along really well, good relationship, battling evil. So it was kind of, I've never heard the term, but I feel like buddy horror is a thing. And you can probably think of several more. If you go back a bit, some of the, I'm trying to think, I think thing like Phantasm 2 has a couple of guys in it fighting it, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I mean, Kevin Bacon and Fred Ward were terrific. The chemistry was terrific.
It really was. You know, you feel like they're just longtime buddies right from the get-go. Kevin Bacon plays Val or Valentine McKee, I believe is how you pronounce it.
Yeah, Val McKee, yeah.
And Fred Ward, is Earl Bassett. So, you know, it both are just, like I said, kind of, you know, your average American laborers. They're, you know, they're glad for their freedom. They work for themselves doing seemingly odd jobs and
around farms and stuff, right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, like cattle ranching and I'm trying to think of
fixing fences, stuff like that. And this tiny town, and I have to say, when you see the title of the town, it says population 19 or something like that. It's really, really small. That's kind of funny.
Makes me think of the little town I kind of spent my teenage years in. It was really small like that. Not in a desert like these guys, but just a small population, you know. And it's interesting when you live in a town kind of that small because you really do sort of know everybody. And everyone in town knows everybody. You know, you have Mr. Wong's store and you know, you go in there and that's like the meeting hub of town almost. It's almost like the bar of town, you know?
Yeah, 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 absolutely. It's just the dynamic between these two is really solid there. And there's some other kind of interesting characters in the town. It's like, Victor Wong, isn't it? He plays
Walter Chang.
Well, Chang, that's it, Chang.
Yes.
Who's the man who comes up with the name Graboids, right? Because they're trying to figure one out. He's a wheeler dealer, this guy, and he's kind of funny, and he comes up with the title Graboids. So that's how they get their name. And there's also, Bert and, what's his wife's name?
I just want to call
and Heather. Bert and Heather.
There you go.
Are a couple of survivalists and have these amazing array of guns because they're convinced they're going to need it for, you know, World War III or whatever. They're both like-minded. They're both into that. So that's kind of handy. And there's an annoying teenager and a few other people, right? There's a lady who's... Is she a seismologist or a geologist or something? Rhonda, a seismologist, Rhonda.
She's out in the desert, but doesn't seem to know a lot about anything but her work. So she's kind of an interesting character. And she's the one that tells them, you know, hey, I'm getting these really strange readings underground. And, you know, are there any explosions in the area? And they're like, no, not that we know of. Things kind of go to hell pretty quickly, don't they?
Well, basically, things start disappearing. People get attacked and stuff. It's basically gigantic sandworms who can move really fast under the earth.
Yeah.
And basically, they're going for any kind of repetitive sound. So it's a bit like Dune, you know, the sandworms in Dune go for repetitive sound. These things aren't that big, but they are pretty deadly still. And it's a case of how are they going to survive this? And it's basically Val and Earl coming out trying to improvise pretty much, right?
They're basically quite a bit.
It starts with them talking about leaving town, doesn't it? And sort of saying it's time to move on, you know, we've got to think bigger and all this. Then find the body of an older resident, upper electric tower, and they're just holding on to it. And they're trying to figure out, did he have a heart attack? And they said, no, he died of dehydration. Something made him not climb down. So there we go.
Yeah, a little bit of a mystery first. That's true.
Yeah, the Val and Earl find sort of human remains and think it's a serial killer at first, doesn't it? They also warn a couple of construction workers something's going on, but they get it as well. So Valenel then starts trying to alert people, right? And it kind of goes to hell from there.
Yeah, yeah.
But they do realize sounds and make them can distract the creatures, for example. But at first they think it's this weird snake thing, don't they? But in fact, that's like one of the tongues of the creature. They find the snake thing wrapped around the back of the car. Chang hustles him out of it, doesn't he? $15, and then immediately starts selling pictures with the weird creature.
Oh, that made me laugh big time. I was like, oh yeah, that's like American business right there. And especially in the 90s when you had smaller businesses like this,
Yeah, why not? One. Basically Rhonda, she can kind of work out how many worms there are. I think there's four, Earl and Val and Earl are kind of trying to ride to the next town, but they get chased, but they manage to actually evade the creature and it crashes into all and kills itself. Apparently it smells really bad, but that means they've killed one, but there are three others left and they kind of work out. And they also get trapped. Rhonda, Val and Elle get trapped in the desert. They're sitting on a rock, but as soon as they touch the ground, the thing's trying to attack them. So this kind of stuck there. But Rhonda figures out a way out by pole vaulting between the rocks, which was a cool little scene.
I thought so too.
Mid distance shot, and I really like that little scene. It's really fun.
I did as well.
And the whole dynamic between the two of them, they're confrontational, but they're buddies, right? So whenever one of them's got to do something, they do paper, rock, scissors, don't they?
I love it. You know,
it feels like Val always wins as well.
Always, yeah. My brother and I, that's how we solve our issues, you know.
Good way to do it when it's two of you, yes, yes. Anyway, the whole town pretty much ended up on the rooftops of various small buildings, don't they? One of the worms does actually go through the side of the basement of Bert and Heather, doesn't it? But they got so many guns, they basically unload every gun on this thing until it's dead,
right? I like that scene a lot too. I mean, they really do go crazy. I mean, you know, you always have gun enthusiasts in America. I feel like everybody knows this guy has his bunker, and like he's always down in his basement with his collection, and it's great. But yeah, I like the burrowing effect too. Let me mention real quick. Like I thought that worked really well even before we see the creature. What did you think, Mark?
Yeah, I thought it was really good. You got a sense of movement under the soil, but it's very dynamic and fast. So you don't see the holes. You know, like how's it light under the ground? You know, if any of that, it just works. And again, it evokes the creature features, you know, them and giant tarantula and, you know, giant stuff from the 50s, which was also redone after this in a film called Eight-Legged Freaks. You know,
I love that film. Yeah,
that film also evokes the spirit of Tremors.
It does.
And also there's a bit of fighting going on. Bert has made homemade pipe bombs, so that kind of helps to battle them. And essentially they're trying... Oh, I should also mention this annoying teenager that keeps pulling pranks.
Yeah.
So when he actually gets almost caught and screams, everyone thinks it's a prank, don't they? So that teaches him. But he's okay. he's just on a roof somewhere. So they managed to... start taking out the worms one by one. The final one, it just bursts through a cliff, doesn't it, chasing them, and gets splattered to pieces.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, and it looks like, and then Val and Rhonda look like they might be at the start of something as the film ends, and then it just ends. Great, you know, that's the way to do it in a film like this. Just over 90 minutes, straight in, straight out. Mm-hmm. Totally engaging film, wasn't it?
I loved it. I mean, I thought it was legitimately funny, you know. I think the chemistry is there, just enjoyable all around, really.
I think comedy horror kind of works well there are good examples of buddy horror where this kind of diet. I mean, you could even go to something like Fright Night, right? Where Peter, Vincent, and Charlie are the two sort of, they're not friends, but they become kind of friends, don't they?
Right.
And even before that, Bob Hope and Willie Best, the black actor Willie Best, was sometimes in some movies like Ghostbreakers and Cat in the Canary, things like that. Well, certainly Ghostbreakers. So this is a kind of a thing in horror. And it, you can even count Abbott and Costello, honestly.
Oh, yeah, you really could.
Yeah. So it's kind of, I feel like a tradition is it within this without anyone actually realizing it's kind of a tradition. You know, buddy horror. This is fun.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. Fun is the way to describe this. And, you know, if you're going into it just looking for something that's not serious that you can just pop some popcorn with and enjoy, I think you'll have a fun ride.
Just to sum up, though, I feel like this is one of those films that looks dumb but is smart. It's one of those, right?
Yes, absolutely.
It's really well written. It's well acted. It's well cast. It's well directed. The creature effects were solid. They still definitely stand up. Which, you know, this was pre-CG, and thank goodness,
because it would
have been terrible, I think, in those early days of CG to try and do something like this. Though I have to say, there are some obvious effects in the second one that really stand up too. That are, not CG, but they're kind of going that way a bit. But they do actually stand up. But we'll get to that when we talk about number two. But yeah, this one's very solid. I think it, you know, it has a little and it goes a long way. That's the way to put it. In fact, saying that, I think I read that. Yeah, Gene Siskel said something about that. He actually gave the film a negative review, weirdly. But he actually says, a little of it goes an awfully long way, but I mean it in a different way from him. I think the little they had, they really made good use of. Great, you know, the actors and everything. I think this is a solid, solid creature feature. Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm totally in agreement with you. You know, it feels like I kind of wonder, did this spawn on the sci-fi original movie? Because, and I mean, I guess you could go back and say, well, you know, obviously movies from the 50s did that too. But, you know, I think there are people who maybe think they can do kind of lower budget horror movies. And, you know, they don't do it so well. And then it ends up as a sci-fi movie of the week or whatever. Whereas this was actually legitimately well made and, you know, a lot of loved and a lot of love and crafting went into it is what I mean. For a number, I think I'm going to give it a solid 7 out of 10. I really liked it. I mean, I think it works perfect for what it is. And, you know, there's no doubt we love our monster features here. Right. So,
it's
a recommend for sure.
Yeah, I haven't rated it, have I? Just
I think
7 is I think I agree with 7. I think it's a high 7 for me though.
Yes.
I just think it delivers totally on what you want. Actually, you know what? I think I might go to an 8. I think I'll go to an 8. It was just a very well put together thing, and it juiced me to watch more Tremors. And I wasn't actually that aware of how many Tremors films there was. I thought there was 4 or 5, but looking at it, there's like 7. And the most recent one was 2020. So, you know, it's been consistently delivering. And as I say, it's the one character person that's been in all of them, and it's usually the same character. There's a few exceptions, but is Michael Gross's Bert Gummer. And Bert is a good one, I think, to be the one that carries the torch once Earl's, you know, if Fred Ward wasn't going to be in it or Kevin Bacon. I think Bert's a good choice, actually. Yeah, so solid one for me. Yeah, so that was Tremors.
Yeah, I definitely recommend it. I think if you haven't seen it, it's well worth watching. And this is one of those little gems that, you know, I wasn't really, like I said, I kind of just thought it was a sci-fi original sort of thing. So that's the great thing about horror, though. You know, I keep discovering all these great things. And Mark, was it you who suggested that we do this one?
It may have been. I can't remember. It was you or I. I know. I can't remember why we started talking about it. It'll
might
come back to me as we go on.
I think maybe it was the Western theme that kind of steered us toward this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Western horror, maybe. If I'm remembering correctly, anyway. But yeah, I mean, really fun, right?
Yeah, and it seems also, and that I did mention this is kind of a subgenre that I'm not sure I've ever heard defined, which is buddy horror, but it's also desert town horror, you know, and if you look at those, a lot of those are creature features.
Absolutely. You
know, legged freaks and them and so on, but a lot of them sometimes are vampires and stuff, but it's a thing as well, you know, small desert towns, certainly American desert towns have this, you know, The isolation gives it an inlet into horror. So, yeah, it's cool.
And so on to Tremors 2, which was direct-to-video 1996, and it is a sequel to Tremors. It's different but good. It's more about Earl Bassett in this one because Kevin Bacon, I guess, was probably too big at this point, and they probably couldn't afford him is what it boils down to.
Yeah, or he didn't want to do it, but whatever. Yeah. I mean, the reason is it's made out that Val and Rhonda kind of hooked up and went to a different town, right?
Yeah, that's, it's a good explanation.
That's why he's, but that leaves Earl still in the town doing, you know, hired stuff. He's right. Basically, he's got money to. It's inferred that he got a lot of money and he spent it all kind of frivolously. And he's got like an ostrich ranch, right? Which isn't going well.
Yeah,
so that's how it starts.
He's living on his little ranch in his trailer with his ostriches outside, and
yeah,
it definitely looks like he's seen better days until this. He looks like a teenager to me. I wasn't sure if he was actually. I think he is a grown man, perhaps, but early 20s.
He looks young. Yeah. He basically gets a new friend in this sidekick who is a bit Ryan Reynolds, is a fresh fry, a bit Jim Carrey, but not rubbery faced, but a kind of much lighter comedy kind of character, but a likable guy.
Yeah.
Can't recall seeing him in anything else, but he was very likable as a character, for sure.
Yeah, I agree. And so basically, we've got this oil company that they're having some issues with the graboids. What did they say? I believe 6 of their people had been killed by the graboids.
Yeah, it's a small refinery. I didn't even realize such businesses existed. I assumed all oil stuff was massive companies. But no, this is a small oil field in Mexico where they're doing the refinery fine. But there's like these attacks and they figure out it's these graboids because Earl was in the news about the graboids earlier. So Earl's like one of the few people around that actually have encountered and dealt with these creatures. So they come and talk to him. And he's not interested at first, but then they offer him $50,000 for each one he kills.
Yeah,
which is tempting. So he knows he can't do it alone, so he recruits. This guy's the driver of the guy that comes and asks him to do this work, right?
Yeah,
he ends up being his, you know, sidekick while they're trying to sort out what's going on. Played by Christopher Garton. His character's name's Grady. But then as they realize there's much more of these creatures than they thought, they then recruit Earl, then gives Bert a ring, doesn't he? And it turns out Heather has left Bert. So Bert's sitting watching like war documentaries or something and covered in like chip bags. Yeah, things like that, you know, junk food.
Yeah, it's all over
bags all over. Yeah. But, you know, he's still got his massive gun collection. And basically, there is a running joke. I mean, this is really cleverly written again. This is, again, looks dumb, written smart kind of film. And given it's a straight to video, it's an amazing film, actually.
I agree.
I really, really liked it. He says things like, oh, yeah, we were never the same once the Berlin War, once the Russia fell, you know, the USSR fell because they couldn't agree on stuff. Because Bert went into depression when that happened because he was looking forward to World War III or something.
Right.
And Heather left him, in effect. And he just says, oh, she's staying with her sister. But, you know, we find out the truth. But that's fine. So Bert comes along brings a massive truck full of explosives and guns and all sorts of really dodgy military stuff as well. So that is fun. And now it starts where they get to the Mexican field, and it's kind of gory for a straight to video. I guess, well, maybe not. Straight to video can be gory, right? But we see things like they find a guy and they think he's hanging on something, but when they get around the other side, it's just his arms. He's been eaten away, and it's like,
yeah,
what?
I was like, ooh.
So they basically don't know what's going on. Also, the grab boys are acting a bit odd, some of them. What they're doing is they figure out a trick. And you know what? Before it even started, I thought, you know what? If I was hunting these things, I'd attach explosives to toy cars if they're attracted to movement. And they did exactly what I thought. So it's like, have I seen this film? No, I haven't seen the film. But it just occurred to me that's how I would try and take out these things. And that's what they do. They basically strap explosives to toy cars and detonate them when the grab boys grab the cars. And it's a really easy way to kill them. And they start working out, oh, wow, we've killed 12 of these things, you know, already. And so we're going to get $50,000 times 12, split it two ways. So they're really happy. But the graboids, they also encounter like a seismologist or geologist who basically has all this equipment in the ground, but she can track the graboids, right? So she gives them a device. Or not just her, but some of the Mexicans who work on the refinery, they rig up this like TV where they can. It's a bit like Aliens, right? In fact, the film's very much like Aliens.
Actually, yeah, that's a really good comparison, Mark.
Because they've got like a baby monitor for, you know, a sensor monitor for these graboids, so they can see them coming and how fast they move. Once I got to the point where they were just blowing them up, I was thinking, well, there's another hour to this, it can't be just this. And I was where's this film gonna go? But I was enjoying it, I just couldn't think how it's gonna continue. But then it takes a proper left shift, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
And Some of the graboids are kind of ill. Do you want to pick out this bit? They realize they can get twice as much if they get one alive. So they find what is a sick one and think that they found one that's alive.
Oh yeah, they think they've hit pay dirt, right?
And they're boasting I've forgotten his name already. The younger chap.
Grady, right?
Oh, Grady is even boasting to Bert that they've got a live one. I have to say, the shenanigans where Bert starts blowing them up is very funny. At one point, he sort of blows one up, and the stuff goes everywhere. And he's like, note to self, 4 pounds of C4 is probably too much. But there's some other comedy beats. For example, the first time they blow up a graboid, Fred Ward's got this like kiddie's umbrella and he just puts it up. And then he gets protected from the spray of offal, whereas Grady is covered in it. That did make me laugh quite a bit because they didn't talk about it. It just happened. And it's kind of funny.
Graboid guts going through the air down.
Yeah, and Fred Ward carries this quite well. I mean, Bacon, but Fred Ward is always great. I always liked him. Remo, I really like. That's one of his. And he's not in much else, but he is a presence here. He's in some TV as well, but he's really good here. Yeah.
Yeah, and the big change, Mark, in the creatures is... they find out that they are basically hermaphrodites, and they're able to replicate that way. So,
that is just a big change. They become smaller, two-legged beasts.
Indeed, yes, yes.
That hunt by heat, not by sound. So they're completely different animals.
They are.
They emerge from the dead worm to be these two-legged, weird. They almost look like Star Wars aliens, right? Or something.
They do.
Like that.
That's kind of what I was thinking as well.
What did you think of the creature design for these?
You know what? Considering again, it's a straight to video film, I thought it was really well done. How about you?
Yeah, I thought there's no considering. These are really well done.
Yeah.
Sort of special effects. These walking things look really good. They were look like puppets. I'm pretty sure they were puppets. But how they did it when they were just walking around was quite amazing. I was trying to figure out, is this a bit of stop motion? Is this green screen? I couldn't quite work it out. It looked really good. It looked really good.
I wasn't quite sure either. Like, I thought maybe it could be some kind of animatronic device they rigged up, but I mean, however they did it,
animatronics or puppetry, it's one or the other. In some things, for sure. They reminded me a bit. There's a remake of Invaders of Mars, which is pretty good, by Toby Hooper from the 80s. And there was a weird two-legged creature in that, Martian creature, and it looked a little like one of these. So it might have been the same special effects house or something like that. But very well done. So basically, they've changed into some other completely different beast, which they call shriekers, don't they? Because they scream.
Yes. Oh, yeah, they're loud.
But they hunt by heat. They can't see and they can't hear. So people, the guys talk in front of them. Across them, but they can't hear, so it doesn't matter. As long as they can't get your body heat, you're kind of safe, isn't it? That's Indeed. How they pitch it, and it's kind of cool. But it does turn out, as soon as they get some, it's a bit like gremlins, right? Don't feed them after midnight. As soon as they eat something, they replicate. A little one comes out, and we get a special effect showing that basically this thing sicks up or gags up a lump of matter, which turns into a smaller shrieker, and they're like, but they also figured out that each worm can spawn three of these things, and then the worm's dead. So basically, we don't get any more worms, we just get these two-legged shriekers, right?
Yeah, and I think it works well, and it's a good change, and just enough of plot device to kind of swerve us, and because I was thinking the same as you, like, man, there's a lot of this film to go, so how are they gonna do this? But I think it works really, really well.
And there's some clever plotting. For example, the things keep going for the cars, and at first you think, well, why are they going for the cars? And it's right, the engine's been running, they're hot, they try and eat hot things. So they're strong enough. Their jaws are strong enough to sort of chomp through metal. I have to say the creature designs are not entirely different from the full Graboids, are they? The mouth parts look the same. So we're not they're not entirely different creatures.
Yeah, they're kind of cool. Something
else. And in fact, I think one of the cast makes a comparison. Maybe it's like, caterpillars become butterflies. I think Fred Wall says that sure don't look like a butterfly, something like that. There's one of those kind of lines. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And essentially, it's a kind of similar retread of the first story in terms of people trying to escape these creatures. That makes it sound like it's the same thing. It isn't. It's not the same thing. They're not hiding on roofs. They're hiding behind things because the heat wants it. And it's got a touch of the aliens about it, hasn't it, as well?
It does. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I expected Tremors 2 to sort of do the same thing as Tremors 1, just with a different cast, and a different location. Because that's kind of what a lot of sequels did back then, to be perfectly honest. But they really went for different stuff here.
Yeah. And there's some funny tie-ups. For example, Bert, not only does he bring all his, military stuff, he brings, like, this high-grade food that for soldiers. Which then also, the Shrieker, I think there's one Shrieker left. They managed to get rid of all of them. Bert does a lot of them by just riding his truck over them. I have to say there's one bit that also made me laugh, where Bert actually gets back to him and he says, and it basically is harping on about, why didn't you tell me what I was getting into? I could have been brother. And they said, well, how do we know giant worms are going to turn into these two-legged creatures? So it's just like that. But he keeps going on about it. But he did come with all these food concentrates, which the last Shrieker gets hold of, which means it massively multiplies. So there is that. It is funny that they get the sensors when all the worms are going. And I have to say, we haven't really talked about the worm stuff. There's one point like it looks like a dozen of the worms are chasing the truck across the desert.
Yeah.
And they're trying to get away. And they also even get dragged around because the guy, the younger guy, Grady, makes a chain with all these cans on it as a way of attracting the worms, right? But it's hanging off the truck and somehow one of the worms bites it and then starts dragging the truck around, which is very reminiscent of Jaws. Very reminiscent.
Yes, absolutely.
Think? Yeah, I thought of that immediately. That was also quite a lot of fun.
I agree. Yeah.
And essentially, they kind of figured out, for example, if they can hide their body heat, they can evade these creatures. So they manage to get away by hiding behind like doors. They hold doors in front of them and all walk really slowly. But there's one of the shriekers is near the car. So they get Bert to get out his massive sniper gun. It is massive, this gun.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And he takes a shot, and it's so big, this gun, the thing kind of literally explodes when the bullet hits it. But unfortunately, they also have, the bullet kept going, and it's gone through cans of oil, which I thought was going to feed into the plot, but didn't, because there's like leaking fuel. But it also went through like the engine block of the car they wanted. And you kind of see the entry and exit holes. It's like, oh my God, they just shot their own car. And again, Bert's like, again, how could I know this? It's like Bert getting peeved. It's very funny.
I liked Bert actually. I mean, I liked him in the first movie too, but he has even more of a character here. And I think he's just more funny in this than the first film. That really comes through.
The situation really, they really took what they had, which is, okay, we can't get Reuben McEntire back. We can't give Kevin Bacon back. What are we going to do with these characters? And they aced it. They aced it in the writing. So I think this is way better than it had any right or expectation to be. Someone did a really good job. It makes you wonder sometimes when you see films like this, it's like, why can't a company who we know does budget stuff, and I don't want to name a particular company, but why can't they make one decent film, you know, with the right talent? Roger Corman used to do it, right? He'd just give people that were keen the chance to make movies. And there's some drossy ones, but there's some great films produced by Roger Corman over the years. So it's possible, you know, you get motivated, talented people together, you can do stuff like this. Right.
Absolutely, man. It's possible. And, you know, I mean, you're still seeing indie horror doing well today, I think, because of passionate people, essentially.
Clever and talented people as well.
Yes. Yeah, no doubt about it. And I mean, this definitely had that, because to see something like this straight to video at the time, you know, you didn't get that thing that you didn't get that quality is what I mean. You know, for a straight to video release, it was typically pretty bad. But you knew what you were getting into. So, you know, I can imagine if you watched this back in 1996, you're probably like, man, this had to be a theatrical release, right?
Yeah. It should have been. There was some clever stuff in here. For example, Earl needed to get into the shack where the truck was. And it was full of these shriekers as well. So they actually covered his head and sprayed him with CO2 fire extinguishers to cool down his outer layers. Because at one point he actually distracts them by putting boiling water on trousers and then winching them out, doesn't he?
That was smart. Yeah,
that was pretty smart. So he basically hasn't got a heat trail initially. So he's in the thing with them and then they're ignoring him. But suddenly he's starting to warm up and you see through their vision that they're starting to see something moving. And they're kind of suspicious. And they got these weird things on the top of their heads, flaps that open when they can detect heat, which kind of lets you know that they're interested. And that was kind of cool. It's really, which in that bit reminded me, you know, in some zombies, like for example, The Walking Dead, sometimes people do things to pretend to be zombies to be able to go out in zombies. They did it in Shaun of the Dead. They did it in The Walking Dead by smothering themselves in guts.
Oh, yeah.
And just walking among the zombies. And there's a really terrific sequence I remember in The Walking Dead where they're out with the zombies, but it starts to rain, which means the smell will wash off them.
Yeah.
Which means the zombies just like, that was a really cool sequence. But it basically, they did it before that in this movie, right? That's what
they was done they before
that in this movie. So it was, and then essentially, again, we get a bit of a laugh from Bert where he says, oh, basically, I set a bomb on your truck, Bert. And he's got, I said, my truck? What? And then he says, we better run.
Because
it's full of explosives and they're all hiding behind the shack and Bert's like runs past him and says, no, we go around further than that. And boy, when this thing goes, it goes. And we also see like the grab boys, not the grab boys, the shriekers and their tongues trying to get out of this shack thing, like bursting through the walls as well, before it entirely blows up. And also Grady kind of gets caught in explosions, so they're a bit worried. There's also a comedy bit where Grady and Earl were decided who's going to go in, and they do a rock, paper, scissors. And Grady's got a paper and Bert's got a rock, and he says, and Grady's like, oh, one. He goes, no. A rock smashes through paper and just jumps in. And Grady's like, hold on. But it's too late. That. Yeah. We haven't mentioned there's also a lady. Well, I think we mentioned it briefly. There's also a lady in this who might be a love interest for Earl at the end. Dr. Kate Riley. She's okay. She's okay in this.
Yeah, I like her.
There's a few other characters. Very small cast, but well used. Well used.
It's funny because at the very beginning of the film, he's got this picture from like Playboy from the 1970s, and he's like, you see that model? That reminds me of what I can't have in life or something like that. And, you know, and of course, it turns out, you know, that she happened to be the model for that Playboy magazine back in the 70s. So, you know, it's cheesy, but it's fun. I thought it kind of worked.
Because,
you know, things are going better for Earl by the end of the film, for sure. Of course, we know he's going to have money, right? From, well, hopefully the oil company pays out. I guess we'll see it in the third one. But,
basically we kind of see the beginning, because they're making jokes, Kate, Earl and Kate, about, is it time to start dating? You know, do you want to start dating? And the thing, not them too directly, she said, do you think it's time a person like you should consider dating? Is kind of that thing. But on the other hand, Grady's going on about, oh man, we could open a park, you know, like Jurassic Park for monsters and things like that. Based on the money they're going to get. But having said that, they have blown up the entire refinery.
Yes.
That has to be stressed. So, you know, I'm not sure they're going to get paid anything, frankly.
You're probably right, Mark.
Yeah.
Poor guys.
Yeah. So, apparently initially this was going to have a much bigger budget, but it kind of, as Kevin Bacon and Reba McEntire kind of dropped out or whatever, they were diverted off. Reba McEntire apparently had a major tour, and Bacon did Apollo 13.
I read that, yeah. Just a few.
It then got downgraded, but they obviously still had a decent script and went with it. And in fact, looking on Wikipedia, it says here, reviews for the film were mostly positive, with some critics labeling it as one of the best direct-to-video sequels ever made. And I think that's reasonable.
Oh, yeah. I would very much agree, actually.
Yeah, this was really, really good. A really good sequel.
Absolutely. I mean, again, for people who weren't around in this era, you know, if it was direct to VHS, you oftentimes avoided those just because they were much lower quality than theatrical films. And frankly, lower quality than like movie of the week films, you know.
Yeah.
I've
definitely seen sequels to movies that aren't as good on the cinema that aren't as good as this.
Yeah, you know? Me too, Mark.
This was a solid entry and it brought some new stuff to the Tremors universe, which has juiced me for watching more, you know.
I'm up for more for sure. I mean, I think it would be fun to continue on and catch up, although I do worry like how some of the CG stuff is going to look as we move forward with this series. But
I don't know how much CG they use. That's the thing. Who knows?
It might surprise us.
I don't know. Both of us are entirely new to this franchise, certainly after the first one. So we don't really know. But like I said, I haven't heard anyone say anything bad about any of the Tremors films. So
I haven't either. So I'm curious, before we give our kind of final thoughts on this, you know, what our audience would think. And, you know, we'd love to hear from you guys. We're on Facebook. I'm going to actually start working on the Twitter again, getting that back up. So you can contact us that way as well. But, you know, our Facebook group is a very welcome community. So highly encourage people who listen to the podcast to join that. And again, just nice folks coming together to talk about the genre we love, which is horror cinema.
Yeah, indeed. And we hope to be putting out shows more regularly. Just also want to mention, we both send our love to Becky and Ryan, our engineer. We do keep in contact with them quite a bit, we send our love to them. Just you mentioned our Facebook group. The address for that is facebook.com/group/UN of Horror. Please come join us. We've got nearly 500 members now, and we've got a fairly active community. There's a small number of very active people in there, and it's a very friendly place.
So, yeah, it's kind of like the little town in this film, you know?
Perfection. Yeah,
there you go, perfection.
We are, perfection, yes.
Perfection Mayberry. Yeah. Except for poorer people.
just to recap, in terms of Tremors franchise, let me just have a look. I think there are 7 movies. We may continue going on. It might be the next recording is the next 2 movies. I'm not quite sure. But one of them is also a prequel, which would be kind of interesting, where the guy that plays Bert plays his own ancestor. So that is going to be kind of a lot of fun. Now, the titles of these, Tremors 3, Back to Perfection, made in 2001. Tremors 4, The Legend Begins. That's got to be the prequel, right?
It has to be.
Tremors 5, Bloodlines. Oh, that's a very generic title. It's almost like a Hellraiser title, that Bloodlines. Then Tremors, Cold Day in Hell. And then finally, the last one, Tremors, Shrieker Island from 2020. Oh, man. Which I have heard quite good things about without going into spoil, without it being spoiled. I've just heard, that's a really good film. So that's kind of nice to know, right?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, there's still good stuff for us to watch in this franchise. And I'm really keen to move forward with it. You know, as long as you are as well, of course, Mark.
Yes, I definitely am. Yeah. I really enjoyed this quite a lot.
Do you want to rate this one?
Yeah. It's not as good as the first, but it's close. I give it a 7 out of 10. Close 7.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm about the same on this one. Like, I would say I'm still at a 7, maybe at a slightly lower 7 than the first one, but I don't want to go lower than that with it, really, because, again, the story's there, the effects are really good, the casting, just it all comes together. So
the writing, everything works. It's a good fun movie. The new character, Grady, is quite a good addition, and they use Bert really well in this.
Yeah.
Fred Ward was solid in the first and he's solid in the second. So it's all firing for me, this one. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. I like Fred Ward as the main character. I mean, I think he does a good job in kind of assuming that role. And I think the guy has a really, like, unique kind of voice and just a unique look to him. You know, he doesn't look like your typical Hollywood actor from the time. So I think he's kind of a perfect choice just for the character in general for the first one, but he ends up being a great main character for the second one as well.
Yeah, very good.
Awesome. Well, before we close out, Mark, anything else you would like to add to this?
No, other than I hope that we'll be doing more regular shows, and then maybe we do other things with the community that we've done in the past. Promises, but we're going to try and get our heads together and make some plans. But our first and foremost priority is getting some more recordings done to sort of feed the horror. And there's so much horror. I mean, so much good horror still coming out. If we did one a day, we wouldn't be able to deal with it. That's how much good horror there is. I mean, past and present. So we're just picking and choosing what we like at the minute. That's how we're going to proceed, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, we love your suggestions too. And, we'll add it to the large stack we have. But that, again, I always compliment the horror genre. I think that's why it's my favorite genre of film, because there's always just such so many unique titles, and there's kind of so many sub genres within the horror genre itself. It's just a lot of fun. And so we keep coming back, right?
Yeah. The world never gets boring, because there is such a large variety in the genre of horror. I think it's possibly the most varied genre there is. Sci-fi is also obviously very broad. There's lots of different types of sci-fi too, but horror really it can be horrific, it can be fun, it can be goofy, it can be scary, it can be, there's all sorts of ways it plays. The other thing about it is everyone's got their own points of phobia, right? I particularly get a bit skeeved out about some supernatural stories, though I do not believe in any of that. Those kind of affect me the most. Whereas other people might not like blood, or might particularly like, slashers, or, right, and things like right. that. So each of us have got a different, what really hits our phobic points, and some things to some people, it's okay, and others it's like, oh, man, that's the best horror film ever. Again, that's the variety of horror. So I've got a lot of time. I've always been a horror, I think we both have, right? We've always been a horror people. Horror people are lovely people.
They really are. It's funny, because you have some of the nicest folks in the horror community that you'll ever meet, which I would not have expected, when we really started doing this podcast, which, again, we're, a child of horror, et cetera, really. Which, by the way, they're back. They're doing.
They are back. Now. Yes.
Just want to plug them and say, I think they're on Patreon, but well worth it. I'm a subscriber, so I do recommend them. I would have never thought that, the people who like watching these types of films, myself included in that, let me say, would be just such lovely folks. So it's really cool.
Indeed.
Maybe we're just like very calm, because we get it all out when we watch this stuff. I don't know what it is, Mark.
It's catharsis, right? It's catharsis.
Catharsis. Yeah. Yes.
Yes. Okay, let's wind up there. Do you wanna lead out, or shall I?
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening. We really appreciate it. We'll be back soon. We promise. Lots more good stuff ahead on the United Nations of Horror. I'm Jason.
And I'm Mark.
And we'll see you next time, right here on the United Nations of Horror.